Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Accelerate series. I'm your host, Adam Chen. The startup world is moving at a breakneck pace. For seed stage founders, the goalposts aren't just moving, the entire field is being redesigned. Between the explosion of AI native architectures and the shifting benchmarks of venture capital, building a company today requires a new kind of playbook. Building on the foundation of our flagship show at FinStrat Management, this special Accelerate series of the Innovators and Investors podcast is dedicated to the stories and challenges of early stage builders and what drives them to innovate. We're sitting down with founders who are navigating the chaos, hitting their milestones, and redefining what it means to be a venture scale company in the age of AI. Whether you're looking for inspiration from other founders or just want to understand the latest expectations in the early stage, you're in the right place. Now, on to the show. And welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast Accelerate Series. I'm your host, Adam Chen, and I'm pleased to have our guest, Kingshuk Khan, the founder and CEO of Ikigai, here on the show today. King, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what Ikigai is trying to solve?
Hey, Adam. Thank you for having me on the show. Really excited. My name is Kingshuk Khan. I'm a former engineer at Google and IBM, and I've been around the startup world for a long time. And more recently, I've started my latest venture. It's called Ikigai. The core concept that we're working with here is that resumes and interviews are now theater, and we're trying to change something there. As everyone knows, the job market is in absolute shambles, and there's a lot of reasons, and there's a lot of different companies that are trying to automate this to oblivion. And we're trying to fix that, and we're trying to get something that understands us as individuals more deeply that can be used against and with the employers that we're going to be working with. Because wherever you go, you're going to be spending a lot of time there, so you may as well make sure that you like it. And that's the general idea behind what Ikigai is and how we're thinking about it.
That's very interesting. You know, I'm curious, King, you know, with a background in IBM and Google, you know, I would assume that you have a very technical background. So Ikigai is kind of not just technical, but you're trying to appeal to emotions and fit and some of these other things with the solution. So tell me a little bit about what inspired you to create this product.
That's a great question, Adam. And I think it boils down to the fact that I, as an engineer, I'm lucky, right? I'm probably not the greatest engineer, but I'm not bad at, but I have met some engineers who are quite incredible. And one of the things that they're just awful at is explaining themselves. I actually am also pretty terrible at explaining myself, but if you try to get them to answer a question, you're going to get some 40-minute ramble about the entire process. And that is great for understanding something. It is terrible for interviewing someone. And I think that's where the core idea came from, is that everyone has like these complexities to their own thoughts and mind and life and so on and so forth. And the fact that we're all being flattened to a literal page makes this a really tricky thing. And especially for people who can't interview very well, right? Because what does that do? If you're good at interviewing, that means you get the job. That means you're not hiring people who are good at the job. You're hiring people who are good at interviewing about the job. And that is kind of a miss here. And so the core has just been, I want to stop flattening people. And I want to also make sure that we're empowering the employers to know that the person they're bringing on stands with them on the mission, the goal, the job, everything.
That really resonates with me. I've certainly had some experiences in my past where, you know, people were reduced to numbers, but, you know, it kind of discounted the complete package and all the, maybe the intangibles that people brought to teams. So that resonates with me, but I'm curious, have you had any like personal experience dealing with this problem? Or have you just witnessed it? Like, tell me more.
I think it's a combination of both. And like you mentioned a little bit earlier, is that I have a technical background, but I've actually worked in a number of different fields. Startups has been one of them. I think I've always tried to understand people. That's always been my goal. My first company, which we were actually Y Combinator finalists for once upon a time, this was almost 8 years ago now, we were trying to understand why we make decisions. So we built a set of headphones that can track how your energy levels are, what your attention level is, what your focus, what your stress levels, and so on, because we wanted to understand why we're making certain decisions. And then I worked in finance while I was in college, and this was like market economies, international diplomacy, why things were reacting a certain way. So it's always been for me about understanding people in the masses, right? But why we're doing what we're doing. And it's always been very interesting in that way. But at a personal level, I mean, I've seen brilliant engineers who should have gone and done some incredible things for Google who just could not fumble their way out of a question that's asked in an interview that makes them look like that they're not competent. Competence does not boil into speaking. And that's the only reason I'm decently good at speaking, is because I learned that I need to do it. But not everyone has that skill. And that's not fair to isolate or alienate them just because they can't. Mm-hmm. It's things like that. And then there's another experience that I had. And I won't dive too deep into this, but when I was at IBM, I got moved into a role that I was not a big fan of, even though in theory it was perfect for me. And I realized in that moment that they just pattern matched me. That was it. That was the only reason I ended up here. Because I hated that role and I did not like the team. I will not mention their names, but it was just not a good experience. And that was the inevitable kind of hitch in my experience at, you know, in my early career that I was not a big fan of.
That's interesting. I'm super impressed by you, King. I mean, what you just articulated in your answer, what I'm hearing is this like self-reflective nature that you have. And you found this gap in your own, you know, skill set. And not only did you observe it, but then you took agency, you know, to kind of close that gap in your own, you know, your own life, which is amazing to hear. But I'm curious, looking forward now, I guess, with Ikigai, what does success look like now from here forward?
Oh, this is a great question. And I think we see it in a number of ways. We're building something that helps both parties, because everything up until now has effectively fueled a war, recruiters versus candidates. And the real core of what I think looks like, what success looks like here, is that we have stopped that. That it is no longer, recruiters are not receiving thousands of applicants anymore. They're receiving 10 to 20 highly profiled fit candidates that make sense, that align with the goal. And then the other half of that is candidates, people who are working, all of us really, are actually happy where we are. I'll give you a quick anecdote. I was giving a presentation in New York, and I asked the question, I asked a show of hands here, who here is happy with their job? And no one raised their hand. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I misasked the question. So I said, okay, let me rephrase. Who here is unhappy with their job? And out of a room of about 95 people, 94 of them raised their hands. And that was very bizarre to me, because that means the thing we spend more than 33, it's not just 8 hours. It's the thing you do when you get home, you think about, you ruminate. We're spending 50% of our lives on this. And people are miserable. So really, I think it's that. I think it's targeting that very specifically, that people are not miserable. People are aligned. They feel good. They think about it naturally. That in the candidate side and on the recruiter side, I think is really the goal that we want. We want everyone to thrive, and we want them to do so by having the people they need around them, right?
That's really interesting. There's a couple things there that really stand out. I mean, congrats on the speaking opportunity, but it just goes back to what I said before. It's like you have the technical skills, you have the reflective nature, and you've honed the skill of public speaking. You in fact are, I believe, a pretty good communicator here. So that's a pretty good trifecta.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. But you know, from the behavioral psychology lens, I think, you know, you have an AI platform, and I'm seeing all this AI innovation, not just in HR tech, obviously, but across, you know, all industries. And the big promise of AI is, like, you know, productivity, Right. But you're hitting on something that I'm really fascinated to see your opinion on is like, but true productivity isn't just about the tool set. It's also about like intrinsic motivation. And if people are happy, you're more energized, you do better work, maybe you produce a better output, maybe you stay on for an extra hour to solve that extra problem versus the 95 of 96 people that are unhappy, you just can't wait for the clock to hit five. So I'm curious what your opinion is on like productivity gains when you can actually find fit. Is there any data around that? Like what, how would you measure that success?
These are very, very interesting insights, and I think they're all equally important in different ways. The part that I'll touch on first is productivity. And I think the way people have been gauging productivity up until this point has been how much can one person output? I'm an electrical engineer by trade. So the most interesting version I can put together here is imagine that you're sending out a radio signal, whatever it is, some signal, and you're trying to make it more productive. You're trying to create more. So you're sending out more waves, more signals, more broadcasts, and so on and so forth. Do you know what happens to the receiver? It can't receive all of them, because there's a limited bandwidth that exists that it can be. So we can be outputting all of these things. I could receive 100 sales emails a day. I cannot read all of them. I cannot make my decision on all of them, because I surely can't have AI go in and say, oh, hey, this is what I think you should do with the company. I can deliberate, but my time to decision making has not changed. And that has become uniform for the entire, I think, industry. Right. And that's where the limits of productivity are, is you can output more, but it's like that one analogy of if you go to an ice cream store and they have 100 different flavors, how long is it going to take you to kind of choose your flavor? It's actually the worst option, as opposed to just having six flavors that you can choose from. So, but now tying this back to how we as people live, I can write a much better letter, email, copy about something I care about than AI ever can, at least for the time being. And the reason is because I have put in more hours of thought. Whether it's I'm on a run or I'm just waking up and an idea hits me, I get euphoria moments. And those euphoria moments for things I care about are really powerful. I think the world is comprised and built of euphoria moments, as anything like the discovery of gravity, effectively. That was a euphoric moment. That was a apple falls and then click. And now you think and you ruminate. And that's how these things are made, right? You can put them in a box, but all the boxes do the same thing. So humans are still the unique one here. And I don't think I'll ever disagree with that. As someone who's looked at the data very closely, seen what really is happening under these language models, and seeing where our limits are, I think humans are far capable of surpassing some of the things that really matter here. And we might not ever be able to beat that with AI. Perhaps a controversial take, but.
No, I mean, yeah, AI can never replace human connection. And I guess, it's one thing, I guess, reach flow state within yourself, but if you can reach flow state within a high performing team, imagine the multiplier that you get on that productivity, I guess, is interesting to
Exactly.
think about. Well, that's fascinating. So tell me, so I mean, these are big problems you're solving. I think it's something that maybe it's not on the surface for everyone, but hopefully this is resonating with our audience a little bit. But tell me, who's this product for?
Man, I want to always say everyone, but I guess that's the boil the ocean problem. Right now, there's two people that it's for, groups of people. It is currently for on the individual level, it's for almost everyone. That part remains true. Everyone deserves to be able to have an insight into themselves of where they should go. We're all confused at some point. They need a place to dump this, right? How many resumes? I had 109 resumes on my desktop for the longest time, each one with slight variants of my experience and thought and so on and so forth. That sucks. Because I can never look through it and I can never find it, and I have to apply it to each job. It was horrible. Everyone deserves a place where they can be authentically interested in their experience and their life so far. And that's what Ikigai does on the candidate side. It allows them to be reflective, think, vent, complain. They can talk about the manager they didn't like. They can talk about the job part that they didn't like, but the part that they did, because that allows them to look inward and see what's going to be my next journey, really. And on the employer side, I think this is the part that really matters a little bit more from the company perspective, which is how do we grow? And that's how it hit me is it's companies that are trying to grow. It's companies where each individual person matters so tremendously that they are the make or break. And nowadays, there's more and more companies, startups, smaller companies that are covering different niche ideas and products. It makes complete sense to have someone who has already thought about this before enter your workspace, because you're not just inheriting their abilities now, you're inheriting all of the thought about that thing that they've had this whole time. So pure alignment between the goals of the company, the work style of the team, and the goals of that person are, I think, entirely what's needed to make something that lasts and that works. And that is kind of who we're targeting. So it's these companies that are trying to grow, whether it's a startup, a small, medium-sized business, that really, really every individual person has an impact in. I think those are the ones that matter the most right now.
That matters. Interesting, interesting. I being in the early stage as FinStrat is, it's interesting. This is another way to solve the same problem. We offer our obviously fractional accounting and finance services. And I think one of the clear benefits of that is just to how do you de-risk that first like senior financial hire, right? That's going to guide you. And that's one solution maybe the problem. But I would also say that this is another solution to that. What there are certain roles you must hire internally. And this is a tool to kind of de-risk those hires. And it's even more important because with AI, right, startups, early stage companies need fewer and fewer people to build what they need to get to the next level, which means that those fewer people mean that much more, right, to the
Exactly.
advancement of the company. So all this stuff is converging where we need a solution. So that's interesting.
Tremendously so. I mean, each individual person always has some level of impact. There was a study that if you take an employee and put them within, I think, 20 feet of the worst performing person at that company, that person's productivity will drop by about 15% to 20%. And if you put them next to the highest performing person at that company, their productivity will increase like 30%. I might be misremembering the numbers, but the stats are true. The stats are that being next to someone who is productive and feels a particular way about something does increase your ability to do that job.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's the proximity, I guess, of who you're around, and certainly in
Absolutely.
early stage too. There's a lot of competition, I think, too. So you do want to rise to the occasion.
Of
It's
course.
interesting. It's fascinating. So flipping it a little bit, I mean, you're bringing up some like productivity numbers and metrics. I'm just curious for these early stage growth companies, the small businesses that want to scale really quickly, how would they measure success with Ikigai? Are there certain metrics that you help with? Like, tell me more.
Yes, and there's a two-parter to this one. The first part is there's the metrics that matter for them are at an early stage. Managing attrition is a really big one, because about 25, almost 24% of startups will fail because of either hiring, poor hiring management decisions, or just general leadership problems. So these are the sort of mesh issues that they deal with, and that is the third leading cause of startup death. It's above running out of cash, actually. And as someone who has mishired a couple times in my own company before the product was fully there, it is devastating. It is really, really bad. So targeting that is a really, really important one. The secondary one that really matters here is that their job is being done. that the mesh between the company, the person, and the team is there. And the hard part about this, and this falls under why Ikigai even exists in the first place, is we're trying to quantify qualitative things. And so how do you do that? Because sometimes it really boils down to how does the person you've added to the company make you feel? How does he influence the people around them? He or she influence the people around them? What is the outcome? What is the noticeable change within the company? These are slightly more intrinsic and difficult to sort of enumerate, but there are KPIs that you can attach to it, whether it's financial, whether it's growth. Sometimes growing companies really are trying to hire a lot of people, reducing the amount of time it takes them to hire that number of people and reducing the number of people leaving. Those are the two KPI metrics that are really good indicators of whether or not what you're doing is working. But then the qualitative ones matter, I think, even more. But again, hard to quantify.
Well, look, King, being founder is hard, and you just shared
Oh,
something that
yeah.
you maybe made a couple mishires at some point. Tell me about that. Like, what did you learn? What was the situation?
They were both interesting. I think I'm a firm believer in a diamond in the rough kind of character. And the reason is because I would say I'm a diamond in the rough, right? I grew up in a pretty rough environment, and it took a lot of work to really get out of it, going to school and then studying and doing all these things and trying a lot of these things to expose you to networks that you would have never had before. So I'm a firm believer that there is like a character trait inside some, if not most people, that if you can harness it, they can really do great things. Now, sometimes you can take it a little too far and you can be a little too trusting. And when you're a little too trusting, they might not be able to rise to that occasion. Both of these mishires, the one that is a little bit more important is one that happened in last year, around near the end of the year. He was a person who on paper was absolutely phenomenal, right? He had a great background. He was very bright. He was very philosophical, all of these sorts of things. And in theory, very aligned with what we were doing. And we worked with him for about 2 months or so, 2.5. And in that time, one of the things we started to realize is he was not an executor, which for us at that stage is extremely deadly, right? Because I'm spending months of work trying to get this to happen, and it's causing me a lot of time. There's money I'm burning while I'm going through this process. Even if they're free, even if they're not free, it doesn't matter because there's a burn there and there's a morale there, right? The rest of my team started to kind of lose traction and momentum because of this person, despite everything looking like he was really trying, and he was. The problem was there was just no fit there. So a really fun case study I have because of this is after that experience, I had made a huge update into the core brain of what we had built. And I had ran, because everyone at Ikigai has a profile about themselves. And I had run his profile against what the company was trying to do. I give it no further context. And the new verified engine that we had built out was able to predict about 16 failure modes for this particular person. And again, this was posthumous, but it was only with information it had before the engagement. And it predicted 16 failure modes, and all of them came true. Every single one of them was completely accurate and flags of things to look out for, things to be concerned about. The caveat was, in theory, this person looks fantastic, but here's the real thing that's going on here. And it was a lot of different, like, psychological triggers, it was behavioral triggers, it was past experience that it was drawing on. It was really able to tell me why this wasn't going to work. And it was fascinating because it was a great learning experience. It was also a fantastic case study. Whenever someone sees it, it's just sort of like, what are you really building here? And that's where the questions really start to get interesting, I think.
So, said another way, I mean, this is a tool for hiring at the outset, and obviously you want to nip in the bud, end these or flag at some of these potential, hurdles right early on, obviously. But it
Absolutely.
tool can also be used kind of like post if post hire, I suppose.
Post hire, absolutely.
Okay.
And it's really helpful for knowing how to engage the next time. It's also fantastic for knowing how to engage with them in the middle of it. One of the other mishires was if you try to like there was a we needed some more sales really. This person was very outgoing, very out there, all of these sorts of things. He was great networking. But the thing that the machine flagged was if you try to ask him to do cold calls or anything that is actually meticulous, he will collapse. And sure enough, we hit a tight point. This was also following the other mishire. And we were like, okay, hey, we're gonna need you to do this. And the disengagement happened almost immediately.
You
Yeah.
know, okay, so this has got me thinking, right? I mean, we're mid-year 2026, and I read the news, I follow the markets, and I see all these big tech layoffs happening all the time. Now, going back to something you mentioned before, you were hired because of just pattern recognition. And I think we especially in early stage startups, we look at people that have the pedigree of working for some of these big tech firms and kind of put them on a pedestal. Maybe we don't or are not conscious that we're doing it, but in fact, that's what I see all the time. So there's this influx of talent in the market right now. A lot of those people that have been displaced, perhaps from some of these big name firms. So it sounds like to me that this is an extra interesting time for a tool like this to kind of come in because it'll allow you to kind of filter through the noise. Is that accurate?
100%, 100%.
Okay.
I think that the situation, while dire, is the beginning of what I would say is a revolution of sorts. There is so much noise, there's so much displacement, there's so much AI, and we don't know what it can do. I mean, some of us know what it can do. And we recognize that we're probably overshooting a little bit, and there's a lot of displacement here. And there's going to be a lot of resentment, by the way. A lot of people are going to be upset with this level of treatment, but it's also the perfect time for a lot of companies to come out of the woodworks and really take on these incredible talent. I mean, this is the greatest, that is the greatest pool of brilliance sitting out there right now who cannot make it past the applicant tracking system, the ATS right now. But once we can tap into that, I mean, now you're sitting on unicorn after unicorn after unicorn. Who does that market share comes from? It comes from the giant companies that decided to drop them. So the opportunity, I think, is immense.
Well, tell me more about that opportunity. I mean, you mentioned some of these, ATSs. I've implemented ATS solutions in the past. There's a lot of incumbents in that space, but
Course.
how is this going to disrupt it? What's the future hold?
I like to say that we have no desire to shake up the ATS field. Let them do what they do. They do a lot of other things that we don't do. But there's one thing that we do that they don't do, and that is really getting the understanding of people. We're not out here trying to make the decisions for anybody. We're just trying to surface the information that says, hey, when you have this conversation, know what you're talking about, right? Know what you're asking them. And from then, so where we sit really is right in between. There's the ATS, there's the interview, right in the middle is where we sit. That's
Got it.
it. And where we can go from there in the future, it's a different story. The network effects here are fascinating. And when this becomes less about can you get hired and boils down more into who should you talk to? Because that's where stuff gets really interesting. If you've ever met anyone randomly and just had a fascinating conversation with them, like, wow, I wish I met you earlier. That kind of experience.
Yeah.
That's where we're going, I think.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, I know, we talked a little bit about AI here, and I know, most early stage companies right now, it's kind of table stakes to be having AI as a co-pilot or a partner to you as you build this thing. But I'm just curious, no one can build it alone, but what's your support network look like? Who's helping you here along this journey?
I've got some incredible people, I think, around me, and I think they're the reason we are where we are. I've got some advisors who are super experienced. They've got, 30, 40 years of experience. You've met some of them before. And then I've got one person. I would never hire a friend just because he's a friend, but this person just so happened to be one of the smartest people who was underutilized potential for a very long time. He is the diamond in the rough, by the way, 100%, because this guy has completely risen to the occasion. He was a good friend for a long time. Now he's one of my best friends, and he is my head of product and head of community. Whenever things are going wrong, whenever things are hitting a wall, whatever it is, he's sort of like my anchor. Him and a couple of other people that are here. He's the one who's physically the closest to me, so I see him the most often. It was funny because yesterday, last night really, I was dealing with some stuff, some stressors, there was a little bit of, what's the word? Some shady work going on with some of the people you work with, and that's just what happens, right? And we went for a walk, and we were chatting, and we were talking about stuff. And I think he had a little bit to drink beforehand. He was like a little, he had some tequila shots or something like that. And he was telling me, he's like, AI could never replace this. I was like, replace what? He's like, AI could never be slightly tipsy and go for a walk. That just can't happen. And it was such a funny experience with him because it's like, we really are playing the most human game ever. And I think that is so important, is that an AI can never become that support system. I mean, maybe one day it can be a version of it, but there is something about a midnight walk with one of your best friends about how hard this game is, who can say nothing and understand you completely. He doesn't need context. He doesn't need information. He just gets you, or she. So.
That is powerful. That is powerful. And I couldn't agree more. Well, King, as we wrap up the show here, I just have one final question for you. And as I mentioned, obviously being a founder is hard, especially at these early stages, especially in the macro environment where everything seemingly is changing week over week. But if you had to give one piece of advice to another founder, what would that be?
Oh man, that's a great question. You know what? I think because it's something I have been not doing recently is trust your gut. Always trust your gut.
Okay.
If something feels a little off, if something is not focused, cut it and go back to work. That's it.
I love it. Kingshuk Khan, founder and CEO of Ikigai. I want to thank you so much for joining me. I enjoyed today's conversation and all of our conversations, and I look forward to our next one. Thanks for
Thank
coming
you.
on.
It was a pleasure.
And this is another episode of the Innovators and Investors podcast, the Accelerate series. I hope the listeners gathered some good information today. We'll include all of the links to Ikigai and King if you want to keep in touch with him, his LinkedIn profile in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care. Well, that's a wrap on this episode of the Innovators and Investors Accelerate series. The road to seed and Series A has never been more complex. But as we heard today, the opportunities for AI-native startups to disrupt the status quo has never been greater. If you enjoyed this deep dive, make sure to check out our main podcast feed at finstratmgmt.com/podcast, where we host broader conversations on the intersection of finance, strategy, and innovation. There, you'll find our full library of episodes and resources designed to help you scale smarter. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review if you found today's insights valuable. I'm Adam Chen. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.